Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 13, entitled The Bhagavata Avatar Answers Questions, Text Number 37. Deho pidaiva vashaga kalu karma yavas. Saram bhakam pratis samiksha taleva sasu. Tamsa prapancha madhiruda samadhi yoga. Satnam punana bhajati pratibuddha vastu.
Satnam punana bhajati pratibuddha vastu.
Deha,
the body.
Api, even. Deva, of the Supreme. Vashaga, another control. Kalu, indeed. Karma, the chain of fruitive activities. Yavat, as long as. Svarambakam, that which initiates or perpetuates itself. Padisamikshate, goes on living and waiting. Eva,
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Sasu,
Sasu.
Along with the vital air and senses. Tam.
Tam.
What's that, the verse which I say written on here? Oh yeah, sorry. Just got confused with the pages. Tam. That body. Saprapancham, with its variety of manifestations. Adi Ruda, highly situated. Samadhi, the stage of perfection. Yoga, in the yoga system. Svapnam, just like a dream. Puna, again. Nabhajati, does not worship or cultivate. Pratibuddha, one who is enlightened. Vastu, and the Supreme Reality. Okay. Translation and purport by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. The material body certainly moves under the control of supreme destiny and therefore must continue to live along with the senses and vital air as long as one's karma is in effect. A self-realized soul, however, who is awakened to the absolute reality and is thus highly situated in the perfect stage of yoga, will never again surrender to the material body and its manifold manifestations, knowing it to be just like a body visualized in a dream. Purport. Although Lord Krishna recommended in the previous verse that a self-realized soul not give attention to the body, it is clear from the Lord's statement here that one should not foolishly starve or injure the body, but should patiently wait until the chain of one's previous fruit of work has completely exhausted itself. At that time, the body will automatically die according to destiny. The falling doubt may then arise. If a Krishna person pays proper attention to maintenance of the body, is there danger of again becoming attached to it? Lord Krishna here states that one who is highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, having understood Lord Krishna to be the actual vastu or reality, never again surrenders to the illusory identification with the material body, which is just like the body seen in a dream. Om Agyanatim Namasya Ganam Janashlakya Shakshulamitam Riyana Tasmai Shigravimaya Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasari Kaurava Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the Hansa avatar continues to speak. And in this particular verse, there's a couple of points mentioned, which is basically that it's described how the body is under the control of destiny. Because we have acquired this body according to our karma and our desires in our previous life. So according to that, we get a particular body, a particular set of senses, a particular amount of happiness and distress. My spiritual master, Devamita Swami, once talked about it, how people think, oh, you know, I have choice. I can choose this job or that job. Or I can choose to live in Albert Park or, well,
Caulfield.
So we have choice. You know, I'm free. I can choose to drink Coca-Cola or Pepsi. No problem. But the choice we have is only in the frame of the amount of happiness we are destined to get and the amount of distress we are destined to get. We might have the example, somebody has a job, and the job pays me a lot of money. So that's great happiness. He can buy expensive things from it. He can, you know, drive around with his big car and everybody's looking at him. At the same time, he sacrifices his family. He has so much stress, he gets ulcers in the stomach. So he has a certain amount of distress and a certain amount of happiness, and he just decides how he's going to get it. He's not going to decide anything about the amount of happiness, but he's going to decide, you know, how he's going to receive that suffering or that happiness. He can't do anything about it, because this is the karma. So in this body, we, and generally, as a non-devotee, we'll just receive the reactions from our previous activities. And when the karma is exhausted, then the body will die. Well, even then, there's still some karma. You might have a very painful death, or what everybody thinks they're going to have is they're going to fall asleep very peacefully, and then they will not wake up. But that's not quite true. Reality teaches us something else. It's interesting, I think I heard the statistics, as far as I remember, that was 80% of old people die on the toilet. And the anus is called the gate of death, mrityu. And, or the painful gate. And we all know where a person goes when he leaves, when the soul leaves. So the anus goes right to the hellish planets. So, yeah. So it's not usually a very pleasant way we leave our body, and altogether we don't want to leave our body, but that's a different topic. So a self-realized person will understand that he has been given this body according to his previous karma, and he's just gonna tolerate in it. A very famous example is Jada Bharat, how he received the body of a deer. Bharat Maharaj, and later on he became Jada Bharat, and after he passed away as a deer. So when he was a deer, by the grace of the Lord, because before he passed away he was already situated in the Bhava stage, but because of some Vaishnava Bharat, he fell down and he had to take the birth of a deer. And by the grace of the Lord, he could remember his previous life in that very body. So as a deer, you know, not to get involved, he stayed away from the other deers. So he didn't mingle. He was very wise. So he was kind of hanging out only in himself, hiding himself so that he doesn't get influenced, and he kept that consciousness. And then he just waited till that body died. Till he left the deer body, and then he took another birth as Jada Bharat, as a full enlightened living end, like human being. And in that life, he went back to Godhead then. So that's the other point of that verse, how it is explained that once a person is realized in the absolute truth of Vastu, in the supreme reality, that he will not fall again into illusion. So the ones fixed in that state, because the depth of the relation, the realization is so strong, there's no way to deviate from it anymore. One has seen the truth, and he's not going to go for anything less than that. So I was thinking how this conversation started, because now we have so much, you know, we have a lot of Sankhya yoga. Basically, it's all about Sankhya yoga. It's all about understanding truth and in realizing it and acting upon it. And so I was looking again up how this, you know, how this developed. So Krishna was talking to Uddhava, and he was teaching him about devotional service and so many things, about detachment. And then Uddhava, out of curiosity, asks about the Hansa avatar. He's asking Krishna, why did you appear to Lord Brahma and his four sons, the four Kumaras, as the Hansa avatar? What was the cause for it? And that was basically the beginning of the chapter, after several verses where Uddhava still was conversing with Krishna. So Krishna explains to him that one day Sanatan Goswami was approaching his father, and he was asking him that how we can destroy the mutual relationship between the mind and the senses, which are the mind receives, like the senses, the sense objects enter into the mind and the mind is attracted to them. So he was, the four Kumaras are inquiring how we can cut through that relationship. And Brahma couldn't answer. He didn't have an answer to that question. He didn't know what to do, because he himself is involved in creation, and it's, he himself gets bewildered sometimes. So you can see, like, Lord Brahma is, he's like Mr. Universe. He, you know, he's the head of the whole universe. He is the creator of it. He is the most intelligent and most pious living entity in this whole universe. And he couldn't answer this question. So that Brahma is not just that he starts speculating and doesn't admit he doesn't know. So he tells him something else. So he told him, I don't know. And then he approached the Hansa avatar to give them pure knowledge. And so the verse is, O Lord, people, this is the 17th verse of that chapter. O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to the material sense objects, and similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us. So when we think about it, that sounds very familiar, isn't it? Like, whose mind is not attracted by the sense objects? Nobody. So our mind is attracted by the sense objects. That's just how the mind functions. And you know, we go on the street and we smell something, we see something, and our senses go this way and our senses go that way. It's the analogy is given that that's like, you know, it's like they're different wives. They pull them here and pull them there, like they want this, they want that. So our senses are demanding. You know, we especially a problem is if we had previous association with them, which you all had, but for some of us it's more fresh because we've been more indulging in these things. So these things are still have such deep impressions in our consciousness because we have been indulging so much in it. So we hear, we pass by maybe, I don't know, JJ or whatever, or any shop, and there's this music coming out of it. Like, you know, when we do book distribution, like just outside from Crossways, there's Seven Angels and Deborah Kay, and they just play the most ridiculous music all day long. So if you're standing outside, you're just blasted with like hip-hop and rap and techno music and anything. And some of these songs are very familiar to you. Maybe been to parties where you've been dancing and drinking to these songs or just having a good time with it. So they straight away trigger off memories. So it's not just that they're attracting in themselves, because, you know, it's all about sense gratification. And, you know, we want to enjoy our senses. But also there's these deep impressions of our mind which we are struggling with to clear off. And then something comes and, no, again, it's triggered off. So it's quite a struggle. That's actually why brahmacharya is recommended really from birth. So if a person is brahmacharya, they should be put right in the gurukul when they're very young, because they haven't received any further impressions in this lifetime. So at least this life has been clean. So for them it's easier. But once you come here, you come to be a brahmacharya, and after 22 years or something like that, it's very difficult. And but even with a pious background, you can see it so much on Swanson Street, you know, like, just arrived from India, first thing they do, get a haircut, and especially Punjabis, who straight away, you know, get, like, you know, funky haircut, spiky, and diet and everything, get some piercings, start smoking, have a girlfriend, straight away, you know, they just get out of the plane, and they go right for it. So that in the heart there's this desire, there's this sinful desire. So we're looking for these sense objects. We like to be attracted by the sense objects. So that our mind is drawn. At the same time, you know, our advertisement does a really good job to bombard us with it. Like, you can't go anywhere and they don't tell you about alcohol, sex. Well, you know, sex includes often alcohol, clothing, cars. It's everything is advertised basically with naked women these days. Everything. Sometimes you don't even, you're like, what is that? Like, yeah, it's just a naked woman. You don't even know what it is. And you have to really read the fine print to figure out what the advertisement is for, you know? Like, they put a car with a naked woman, they put, obviously, jewelry with an, like, even, like, you know, everything is related to sex these days, because this is the most powerful binding force these days. So Srila Prabhupada was explaining one time in a purport in the pastime of Ajamil. In Ajamil, he was passing through the forest, and he saw a Shudra embracing a prostitute, and he fell down, and he was so fixed, he was living with his guru, he was so devoted, and his guru was performing all the rituals, and he fell down. You know, so what about us now, you know? And Srila Prabhupada was saying that he's very compassionate towards those who try to practice celibacy in these days. So, you know, our circumstances are quite difficult for, you know, practicing spiritual life and keeping our purity and our sanity. And it is our decision, basically. You know, the sense objects penetrate in the mind, and then we have to decide how much we actually let them enter. Now, they want to enter our mind, and our mind is attracted to them, but we have to decide where we stop. And remember, Krishna Loka, my mentor from one Isha, always said, don't get into it. Don't get into it. So we have to lock ourselves up. We have to decide, I'm not going to allow that to enter into my mind. I'm not going to allow that to affect me. I'm not going to allow myself to be attracted to it. And you will notice, you know, you go somewhere in your mind, like you just see something from the corner of the eye, just accidentally, basically, and then you're like, keep looking. Or you look away, and then you look again. And you can see, you just want to be attracted by it, you want to enjoy it. Apparently, I think it was Bhaktivedanta Purnasamy was saying, like, if the brahmacharya is doing that, he's considered to be fallen. If he sees a beautiful woman, he looks once and he looks again. One time is okay, it just might enter your sight. Then you look again and you consider to be fallen. So it's very high standard. So we have to decide where we shut down. We have to decide where we pull the screen down and not allow ourselves to be affected by things, which is very, very difficult. Like, we have so many examples from scriptures. We have Lord Brahma falling victim to his daughter. We have Shiva becoming mad after Mohini Murti. And also Kartikeya being born after Parvati agitated Lord Shiva. We have Vishamrita attracted by Menaka, by the tinkling of bangles. It's actually particularly interesting example, because Vishwamitra Muni, he was a great king, and he renounced his entire kingdom, and he practiced, like he became a very, very powerful great mystic, and he was performing the Astanga yoga system, and he attained perfection in it. Basically, he came to the point where it was fixed in samadhi, and this explained how every sense was drawn inwards. They were basically locked in the system. And he was sitting there in trance, in samadhi, in the perfection of the Astanga yoga system. And then somehow other, like, well, Indra was envious, and he sent Menaka. And Menaka came, she was the most beautiful society girl. Like, we can't even imagine how beautiful the niceness of the heavenly planets are. She was the most beautiful woman, and she started dancing in front of him. And he was sitting there in trance and samadhi, and somehow other, the tinkling of her bangles entered within his ear. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining, he could associate these bangles with a woman, and he opened his eyes, and that's it. he lost it. He was sitting there, he was fixed for so many, many years. He was sitting there in samadhi, and just by tinkling of some bangles on some woman, he fell down. And Shakuntala was born, was considered the most beautiful woman in the world at the time. And another interesting example is Subari Muni. Subari Muni was sitting for 10,000 years under the water. And if you've ever tried breathing underwater, you will know this doesn't work, because all you get is lungs full of water. So he was so advanced that he perfected the pranayama system, and he did stop breathing. There was no need for him to breathe. So for 10,000 years, he was sitting in deep meditation under the water. And then one day, two fish happened to pass, and they had sexual intercourse, which is not that exciting for fish, because, you know, women, the female fishes put some of the eggs in the water, and from the outside, the male fish put some salmon on top of it, and this is how it works. So it's not even that exciting. And I think that's for all fishes, as far as I know. That's what we had in biology. So then Subari Muni, he discovered that there's just by seeing that example, he discovered that there's still so many dormant desires in him. And he got out of the water, and he approached Mandata King, and who had 50 very beautiful young daughters. And it's actually quite a funny pastime, because Srila Prabhupada described how, you know, he was a yogi, and he was saying that yogis are very ugly because they're all skinny and matted hair, and they like look a bit screwed up. And also, he's been sitting since 10,000 years under the water, so you can imagine how his skin looked. So he wasn't very attractive. So Mandata King was saying, "Oh, you know, yeah, my daughters will decide amongst themselves who's going to marry you." And he knew that. That was just because the king didn't want to marry any of his daughters to him. So what he did, by his mystic powers, because yogis are very powerful, so he rejuvenated his body. He gave himself a very, not just rejuvenated, basically a new body. So he had a very, very attractive, very youthful, very strong body. And then all the women, all the daughters wanted to marry him. So it's not just men who look after the beauty, also the women. So, and you know, if we look at these people, like, how can we possibly compare to these big guns, you know, sitting 10,000 years under the water, being situated in samadhi, being Brahma? That is, how can we possibly compare ourselves to this? In Kali Yuga, our intelligence and our determination is very weak, which makes meditation like that basically impossible. In the fifth canto, fifth chapter, tenth verse, questions by the sages, it's a verse, O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. So this is our situation. And we can see that practically on ourselves. You know, we are somewhere, we smell something, and our mind goes right onto it. You know, sometimes you like you're observing people on the street, and this is basically where we're coming from, you know. Like, some have observed that, you know, especially this, like one very very prominent thing is like you see somebody passing by a shop, and they're like, and they just turn around and just walk right into the shop. You know, there's like there's a step in the brakes and just turn over because they just saw something, and then they go shopping and spend all the money. And another thing is, are we supposed to all go out and say goodbye to Maharaj, or would that be proper etiquette? They're just leaving now. I don't really know. I'm usually out there. What do you think? Maybe just continue. People want to go, can go. Just to the story. Okay, so and also like another thing is if you're on Sankirtan, sometimes when you take a break or something like that, you sit down, and they sometimes have been observing that, for example, just men, like there was a couple of men sitting next to me, and they're just kind of sitting there and like they all blank, and then there's like a beautiful woman passes by and they're gonna go like that. So it's like totally just brain switched off, just following her down the road. And it's very sad. This is our background. This is where, you know, this is where we, well, like, you know, this sort of mind, this sort of determination, this sort of focus, you know, it's very prominent in Kali Yuga. So it's very, very difficult for us to to do things like chanting. You know, we chant and it's, oh, it's too hard, and we might pull our mind back for the first round, and then our mind goes off and we just let it go. You know, like we chant and the mind goes somewhere and we just follow. We just go anywhere the mind is dragging us. And then eventually after a round, oh no, I spaced out. And we bring the mind back to the first mantra, and after the first half of the first mantra, our mind is gone again. And eventually we just want to give up on it and just don't even try to pull it back again. So it's very... It's a very sad situation, and it's something we really have to work on, and we have to deal with. It's our weak determination, and because, like, you know, we see these people have been meditating, they've been practicing so severely their spiritual life, and they attain perfection in that. So you have to follow that path. Yeah, so an interesting part in the Bhagavad Gita in that connection is in the third chapter, after the 36th verse, and it speaks how even we might have like good intention, even we might really think that we gotta fix our mind, we want to properly practice devotional service, we want to do things, you know, nicely, we want to focus, we want to chant our rhymes attentively, you know, we want to be attentive in our service. And then our mind just becomes corrupted and goes astray, and we do other things. So Arjuna is inquiring that by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly as if engaged by force. So what is it actually, even though we don't want to do these things, we are still deviated and we are still affected by it. And Krishna answers to him that it is lust. That is, lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world, and that he explains how lust is born out of the contact with the material energy. So we come into conditioned life, we have this desire to enjoy separately, and in this state, once we enter the material energy, our pure love of God gets transformed into lust, which is exploitation. It explains how milk touches sour tamarind turns into yogurt. And once we come in contact with the material energy, we are under the control of the modes, the natural tendency of the modes is to degrade us. The natural tendency of the modes is to go down, 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 down. For example, it says, you know, first we have there's lust, and then it gives rise to wrath, to anger. And there's another part in the second chapter, 62 to 63, how it says that, you know, we contemplate, then we develop attachment, then we develop lust, then we develop anger. From anger, when we are frustrated, then we develop anger. Then our memories, the will, and then intelligence is lost, and down we are. So there's a natural dynamic in the material energy and the modes that we sink deeper and deeper. And it's explained in one very powerful purport. Srila Prabhupada explains how the saving places of lust are the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. And they explain how the mind is the center of all activities of the senses. And that once we hear about sense objects, our mind becomes a reservoir of all kinds of ideas about sense gratification. So we hear about something, and straight away our mind creates so many images, so many ways to enjoy. And then the mind and the senses, I explained, become repositories of lust. And then the intelligence, when that happens, the intelligence becomes affected. So when the intelligence is affected, then the lusty intelligence influences the soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter. And in this way, the spirit soul sees as the material energy as all in all, and it sees sense gratification as the real purpose. So in that sense, we become, even we have good intentions, we are in the material energy where our love, original love, is transferred into lust. And in this situation, everything has a tendency to go down and down and down, that we completely get lost in the material energy and just completely identify with it. And so as a solution for that problem, Krishna explains to Arjuna that in the very beginning he is supposed to curb that great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses and to slay the destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So from the very beginning, once we feel these things coming up, once we are out there and we see something is entering our mind, we get in touch with the sense object and it starts to penetrate us. At that point, we have to curb it. We have to regulate the senses. We have to look away. Don't look at it, just look away. Don't think about it, just like leave it. It doesn't make things better. So once we're in touch with the sense objects, we can't allow them to degrade ourselves. So regulating the senses is the most essential part of it. And then Krishna explains further how the intelligence is higher than any of the material elements. And because the intelligence is the one who can interfere. We see something, we understand what is happening. We have our intelligence trained with the Shastra, so we see something entering our mind and we think, okay, contemplating the objects of the senses, attachment develops, lust develops, frustration, anger, and we can see this whole chain. We don't just see like, oh, that looks good. Oh, that's nice. We see this whole chain. So the intelligence has to be trained, has to become a grip, has to get a grip on it, and the intelligence has to be able to curb our senses. Because in the stage we are now, our mind is still considered to be our enemy unless, because it's not liberated. Because our enemy is a reservoir of all ideas for sense gratification, as we just read. So we can't rely on our mind in that stage unless it's liberated. So we have to take help from the intelligence to regulate it, to allow what enters our mind, to restrict the mind, to restrict our senses, to restrict our activities. The intelligence has to kick in for that. And one very important thing we're doing with the intelligence is to bring ourselves into the higher modes. You know, we know about the modes of material nature, and we know what things are associated with them. For example, we don't drink alcohol. Why? You know, we might have natural inclination to get intoxicated, or we might have from our previous experiences. And of our previous activities have the experience of being intoxicated, but we don't do it. We elevate ourselves into higher modes. By discrimination, we know what is good for us and what is not good for us. So we retrain ourselves, and that way we liberate the mind. So once we are situated in the mode of goodness, our mind starts actually functioning. In the mode of passion and ignorance, the mind doesn't function properly. So in this chapter, Krishna has been giving Uddhava instructions about the higher modes, and then the Hansa avatar is teaching Sankhya Yoga. So it's a very interesting sequence. You can first see that, you know, we have understanding of elevating ourselves, situating ourselves in higher modes, and then we understand the nature of matter, spirit, and the control of it. And we can develop the mode of goodness. We can become a vegetarian. We can even become a vegan. You know, we can give charity only to the right people. We can only eat good food in the mode of goodness. But you can have also a lot of discrimination. You can be a jnani in the mode of goodness. But unless we develop devotion to the Lord, everything is a waste of time. And we will see that still the sense objects can affect us. Like we saw with Sarabhi Muni, like 10,000 years under the water, you know, meditating, perfection in pranayama, and still he get affected by just seeing some fish. Because he wasn't a bhakti yogi, he was a jnani yogi, he was a yogi. He hasn't had any devotion for the Lord so far, he was an impersonalist. So therefore he could fall down. But for a devotee, it's a different situation because material energy cannot touch a devotee. You have the pastime with Lord Shiva, and it's a very interesting pastime with the incarnation of Mohini Murti. Because it's happening, Mohini Murti appears the first time when, after the demons and the demigods were extracting nectar from the causal ocean. And then there was this issue that the demons wanted the nectar and the demigods wanted the nectar, and they didn't want to share with each other. So they cooperated to get the nectar, but then, they didn't want to share anymore. So the demons snatched the nectar from the demigods. They tricked them. And then Mohini Murti came to solve the whole story. So Mohini Murti came, and she was so, like, Krishna is the most beautiful. Can you imagine if he appears as a woman? So he was so enchanting. Like the demons, they were so attracted. They couldn't restrain themselves. And she was speaking very pleasing words. Maybe she totally ripped them off and cheated them. But they still believed her because she was so beautiful. That's the nature of demons. So then she took the nectar from them and gave them to the demigods. But the interesting thing is that Shiva got to know about this incident. And Shiva wanted to see that form of Krishna. He was very, very curious to see that most beautiful incarnation of Krishna. And Krishna, kind of in a cheeky way, fulfilled his desire. So he was sitting there with his wife and all the great sages assembled around him in Kailash Hill. And then Krishna appeared as Mohini Murti. And he was so beautiful and he was so so enchantingly dressed. And Mohini, and like Shiva saw him and he totally lost it. He basically left everyone behind. He was just chasing down Mohini Murti because he wanted to touch her. And like Mohini Murti was playing all these games with him and just totally bewildered him. And basically Shiva just totally embarrassed himself in front of everyone. He just behaved like a madman. But the interesting thing of this pastime is that it's explained that the Krishna had to come to bewilder him by his internal energy, by his internal potency. The external potency wouldn't have been sufficient to bewilder the mind of Lord Shiva. It wouldn't have been strong enough. Because Lord Shiva is married to the material energy himself, to Durga Devi, who is responsible for everyone, like, you know, just going out, like, according to a cracking whip, you know, everybody is attracted by this and that, and everything, of all of that, Maya Devi is in charge. And Lord Shiva is not attracted to her at all, even though she's a personification of the material energy. So how could anything attract the mind of Lord Shiva if not the Lord himself? So he came as, by his internal potency, and this was the only way to bewilder the mind of Lord Shiva. And also this pastime is displayed to teach us an example. So we can see that there's no other process as powerful as Krishna consciousness. And if we are fixed in Krishna consciousness, the material energy cannot touch us. There's another pastime with Markandeya Rishi. It's a very interesting pastime. We're kind of running a bit out of time. It's in the 12th canto, after the description of the age of Kali. But basically, Markandeya Rishi was curious about, like, he attained liberation. Here we can again see the power of his austerities. Like, Shonaka inquired how it came that Markandeya Rishi was living for two lifetimes of Brahma, and how he survived the total destruction of the material creation. And so it's a very, very powerful pastime, and it's explained that he worshipped the Supreme Lord for 6 manus. Does anybody have the exact lifespan of a manu? 71 yuga. How much is 1 yuga? 71 cycles. It's not a yuga, it's 70, it's cycles. So it's massive. Like, Kali Yuga is 435,000 years old and long. Then Treta Yuga is double the time. Dwapara Yuga is 3 times that time. Satya Yuga 4 times. So, and that is one yuga, and 71 of them, this times 6. This is how long he worshipped the Supreme Lord. It's quite impressive. And then in the seventh, Indra, because he was so envious of his austerity, Indra sent Cupid, who was then sending all these celestial beauties to break his vows. And he was not attracted at all because he was fixed in Bhakti Yoga. So we can see there's nothing as powerful as Krishna consciousness in fixing us in our consciousness. Like all the other yogis, all the other moons that fell down, usually when, you know, because they came in touch with the opposite sex. But a devotee cannot be touched even by the most beautiful form of the illusory energy. It's beyond it. So This is because Krishna personally protects us. And we develop also that deep love for the Lord, that nothing of His energy, because we can see His energy as the servant. We don't see this Krishna's energy as separate from Krishna. We see His energy as servants of Him. So we can see the material energy and think, wow, how wonderful Krishna is. How He could create such a thing. How He could manifest such beauty, such strength, such such a wonderful thing in the material energy. But we know its source is Krishna, and Krishna entails it all. In Bhagavad Gita, in the last two verses of the 10th chapter, it says, Neil, that all beautiful, opulent, and glorious things spring from a spark of His splendor. And He says, what need is there of all this detailed knowledge after He was explaining about His opulences? The 10th chapter is titled The Opulences of the Absolute. Saying, what need is there to know the things? You know, you just got to know that everything of all that is just a spark of my splendor. No, it's just coming from me. So, if we are situated in Krishna consciousness, if we see the material energy as belonging to Krishna, and if we have love and appreciation for Krishna as a beauty, fame, as a non-envious heart, nothing of the material energy can affect us at all. You're always going to be aloof from it. So today is Ekadasi. We can all do some, and also Kartik. So very special day to squeeze in maybe some extra rounds or to, you know, give the mind some extra kicks and try to, you know, better focus on our devotional service, on our chanting. And take some advantage of this very auspicious day so that we become fixed. Thank you very much. Is there any questions or any comments? Yes, Melody. It was what I just explained. At the same time, when we see that we have weaknesses, you know, we have to restrict ourselves. And if we are, you know, if we are that advanced, that's another thing. But if, you know, if we are in our weak and feeble stage, we have to restrict ourselves. For example, you know, the brahmacharis are not supposed to hang out with the women all the time, because there's some natural restrictions to strengthen ourselves as well. Because by association, we develop attachment. We know that very clearly. So the more we associate, the more we will develop attachment. So there has to be some restriction in our association. So the senses, another thing is that I was talking about, is when you see that your senses go off, you know, you can, if your senses don't go off, you can look at something very beautiful for a very long time, but we'll notice when your senses go off, and then you have to pull back. If there's an enjoying spirit, then you have to restrict it. Yeah, so things have to be understood properly. But I get your point. We have it's true. But I didn't say anything in that sense, I suppose. Okay. So thank you very much. Barbara Shimura Bhagavatam Ki Jai.